Right now, it is time for the Media Beat with David Tarachuk. David joins us on a Friday morning. We rebroadcast David over the course of the weekend and also on Monday following our noontime news. And we say good morning for the final time this summer in Maine. Good morning, David.
Well, hello there. It's good to be back with you from the great state of Maine. You're right. And for the last time, because we're going back to New York this week.
Well, you know
capital,
what?
The media capital of the world, as I often point out.
It indeed is. But I have to start off, as someone who's followed politics and news in both Europe and here, this morning when I woke up, I looked at the video of the scene at the White House last night. And, you know, before the election was held, there were pictures of the White House with big Trump signs on it, like it would be a Trump hotel. I have to say I was never more disappointed than seeing the way the White House was used as a prop last night for a political party.
Yeah, it's almost facetious, but it's a serious matter, of course. I mean, the White House was being used as a stage set for political propaganda, and that's always been off limits for previous occupants of the White House. But this one, of course, as we know, is shameless, and used it entirely in that propagandizing way. There was one very disturbing shot from above at the back, as the flags came out, with the eagle atop the flagstaffs. It had a distinct feeling for someone who has reported on Europe and knows anything about the history of so-called populist movements. It had a distinct ring of Nuremberg about it.
That's just one of the things that it was disturbing. And I know that you folks out there that support Donald Trump, I know that you're going to. But had this been done by Barack Obama or by Hillary Clinton, my God, there would be such an outroar and an uprage from the Republican Party. It would be deafening. And once again, there's
an outrage. You're absolutely right.
There's two sets of rules. Actually, three sets of rules. There's a sets of rules for Democrats. There's sets of rules for rhinos, which they call Republicans in name only, and for people who support Trump. There's three different sets of rules. And our government was never meant to operate this way. Never, never, never. It's a sad thing to witness. At 67, I'm very upset about that. And you can comment on this, David. I mean, we've been talking about the danger of the president's rhetoric over the years, the danger of the rhetoric, and we've seen it happen when the car ran over protesters. But a 17-year-old, driven by his mother, carrying an assault-style weapon, to patrol the streets and then shoot two unarmed protesters, not rioters, protesters.
Or to shoot three and kill two of them.
Yeah, yes. It's just, yeah. This stuff, you couldn't write this up for a TV movie, David.
Yeah, it has a horrific drama about it, following the police shooting of Jacob Blake in Kenosha, Wisconsin, to see that vigilantism is certainly allowed. Indeed, you know, some videos suggest that it's even encouraged by local law enforcement, and results, of course, in protesters being shot dead. That's a nightmare scenario that we're seeing playing out in this really nightmarish election season.
It's just absolutely stunning, and I keep going back to the fact. Just imagine if a black American had bought an assault style weapon out in protest, instead of the police giving him a water. What do you think they would have done? What do you think they would have done? And this is where the term white privilege comes in. It doesn't apply everywhere. I'm not one of these persons that will sit there and claim white privilege in every single aspect of society. But when it comes to dealing with authority, when it comes to doing apples to apples and nuts to nuts, black Americans are treated, and Indian Americans are treated totally different than white Americans. You can't claim anything otherwise different.
Yeah, and media that report on that, of course, are subjected to the same sort of vitriol from partisan sources as they always are, but with an increased intensity now. And once again, our head of state, head of nation, and head of state can claim that the media are the enemy of the people, when all the media are doing, of course, is reflecting on the reality in the streets. But it's not the only reality, and you're right to say that the notion doesn't apply to every single case and every single strata of society. There's plenty of places where that crisis mode and that intensity of vitriol does not apply, and indeed that racism is not a daily experience for people, even when they are minority populations themselves. But of course, it's in the nature of propagandizers that they take individual cases and blow them into general cases, and that's what partisanship is all about, turning whatever evidence there is into ammunition for your own case. Nothing demonstrates that more than the president's speech at the White House last night, where total illogicality was applied to the constant barbs thrown in the directions of the president's opponent, Joe Biden. He was described as a Trojan horse for the left in one moment, and then the next moment he's accused of sending far too many African-Americans to jail under the legislation that he promoted and helped pass in the 1990s. You can't have it both ways, logically at least, but you apparently can have it both ways if you're the president of the United States breaking all norms the way that he's doing.
It's an amazing time. Yesterday, something happened that I never thought I would see happen in my 67 years in sports. That is, the NBA did their protest and canceled games and walked off the court. Major League Baseball players did the protest in New York and Miami and walked off the field after they were introduced and did not play the game. But then the National Hockey League also disbanded play and did not play yesterday. And athletes have long been getting committed in helping raise funds for charities, for disasters, and other things. But to see this much cooperation or integration between three different leagues tells you that there really is something out there on the horizon that worries a big swath of people, whether or not they're the electorate or not, I don't know. But there's something going on in this country that it appears maybe we are reaching the breaking point.
Well, sports as a bellwether is not really the most reliable kind of indicator, but it's taken an awful long time. Of course, we just look back a few years to Colin
Kaepernick,
and you'll see, yes, there's been a massive change. It has taken time, but there does appear to be a wave of solidarity here, which I think politicians would be ignoring at their peril.
The next story, which was overshadowed by, of course, what went on at the White House yesterday, and that was the hurricane that came ashore. And thank God, they think the crest, instead of being 30 feet, was 12 feet. But still, six people stuck it out and died at that storm that they know of now, and just widespread destruction on the Gulf Coast.
Yeah, and yet more evidence, if you're prepared to look at the actual evidence, that We are in changing times in a much broader sense too, with our industrial and our own personal automobile emissions. We're helping create another nightmare scenario on land. The rising temperatures mean, of course, dryness and the massive wildfires of California. At sea, we get a warming ocean, and inevitably we get very fast growing and fast speeding hurricanes generated. All of this is more evidence that there is only one solution, which is to cut our emissions. And time and time again, it gets demonstrated. In a way, I think we can say about hurricane and tropical storm Laura is that we got away lightly, even though the damage, of course, was massive for Louisiana and parts of Texas.
Now, here's a chilling story. I'm sorry. And I know there's so many people now out there that are primed to hate the media. But the White House themselves released this story that they're compiling a large dossier on Pulitzer Prize-winning Washington Post reporters and others who they said, quote, are a disgrace to journalism and the American people, end quote. Now, think this out, folks. And, David, I want your opinion on this. The White House putting together a dossier on reporters.
Well, its instantaneous reaction is, well, it's been done before. President Richard Nixon maintained his list as well. And so many echoes, of course, between that corrupt administration and this administration. So no surprise. Those who were on Richard Nixon's hate list, quite rightly, I think, wore the fact that their name was on the list as a badge of honor, and I suspect that's going to be true in this case, too.
And Japan's prime minister is calling it quits after his health. I mean, one of the few prime ministers across the country who's not a tyrant, who actually worked to get along with Donald Trump.
Yeah, for clear reasons.
Yep.
And, self-serving, well, nationally self-serving, and he was rather good at it. There's nothing like sumo wrestling to cement a relationship with this particular president, and it worked. Whether his successor can pull that off is a very, very difficult. It's unlikely to be replicated. Let's put it that way.
Sumo wrestling and golf. Let's not forget about
the perfect combination.
And hamburgers. Remember, they had specially made hamburgers for him as well. I mean, it goes from the sublime to the ridiculous.
The facetious again, yes. But we do have to take it seriously, and I want to put it in a broader context too, if I could. Let's bring out our fanfare for this week.
All right. Here we go. Here we go. Here's the fanfare. There you go.
Our fanfare is not this week for any individual journalist or any individual piece of journalism, indeed. It's really more a celebration prompted by where I'm reporting from an American region. It's a celebration of regional journalism as a whole. I think what I've been able to reflect on while here far away from the media capital of the world is how much solid work goes on day by day in the profession and the industry of journalism. And it's unsung most of the time. But, of course, local television news is still one of the, studies regularly show is people's main, or at least the most widely spread source for people's daily understanding of what goes on around them, local TV news, which gets a very bad rap in our profession generally, or at least the superior parts of our profession, those parts of it who feel superior. But I've been noticing that main newspapers and the TV news are reporting on an aspect of daily lived experience, which is not the sort of thing that you get from the national press at all. But what's clear is that one important story up here in the far northeast is that people from urban areas elsewhere in the United States badly affected by COVID are, in the words of the media reports here, flocking northeast to Maine to buy houses. Clearly drawn here by the fact that COVID has been well contained here. And we talked about this a couple of weeks ago, and how remarkable the Maine state authorities have been with their own CDC working very hard, especially on public information, the daily briefings that take place here, and the fact that Mainers are well aware that there's a pandemic on, but they're on the whole taking the advice and the stipulations and the insistence of the authorities pretty seriously. And you know, in the town that I go for grocery shopping, you'll see people wearing masks in a way that I know in many other states, especially down south, is just not the case. The pandemic is being taken seriously, and as a result, it's being well handled. And the economic fallout of that is almost completely out of step with the national pattern, and you get an economic boom, a mini boom, particularly in property, but also, of course, in all the ancillary service industries that cater for people who are coming to the state afresh and seeking the quiet, not just the quiet, but the health safety, the relative health safety that they can enjoy here. And if I swing away from Maine to another part of the country entirely, almost diametrically opposed, in fact, although still in the east, but the southeast now, in Alabama, the media there, local TV stations and newspapers both, are reporting about a really important development that, again, you're not going to see talked about in the national media that much. It's the much-needed welling of support from food banks and churches and other groups like even school PTAs who are working together to help feed the hungry. The quote stood out for me in one particular story about this in Jefferson County, Alabama, was that the need never goes away. And in fact, of course, with COVID, the needs of the needy are, in many senses, increasing even more as COVID creates such economic havoc as it does, as well as a health crisis. And what we're seeing here is a story, I think, that's emblematic of what goes on in this country, away from the press and the hysteria of the press, and in particular of cable TV and Twitter. Ordinary folks are managing, however tough the odds are against them. And what we get now, I mean, and you know, the listeners of WHDD know this perfectly well, of course, that the daily lived experience of ordinary people can be very different from what the media often concentrates on. So a little fanfare for these regional outlets of media who are telling us, you know, what we need to know is that ordinary life goes on, and the ripples and the changes in that are important to chart.
Yeah, and you know, it's so interesting when we are a member of NPR, and about 4 or 5 years ago, NPR started what they call a local news initiative. Now, unfortunately, to NPR, the local news initiative is being implemented in major markets, and I realize it's a starting point, but I think one of the things that that people have lost sight of, especially in the news media, is that correct media coverage starts from the ground up, the basics up. And if you live in a small community like we have here in our area, we are, of course, a radio station that serves Northwest Connecticut and adjacent Eastern New York. There's a radio station that happens to be in Great Barrington, Massachusetts, that serves the South County area of Massachusetts, and very fine, and these are independent station over in Woodstock with WDST, and what all these, and also WKNY in Kingston, New York now. What all these stations do is When we first started, there were three radio stations covering our area, a couple of daily newspapers, and more. And now we are down to our radio station for our immediate area, a weekly newspaper with the Lakeville Journal, which is struggling, and they're trying their best. And thank goodness also the Waterbury Republican American, which covers our area. But you take our local access TV station and our radio station off the air, and there's no daily connection to town meetings, to town events, to media is so important in this country, and it starts from the ground up. And I think all this national media bashing has had its effect all the way down here to the local level.
Of course, yeah, and what one needs to bear in mind that this is an industry like many industries that has been changed utterly by the digital revolution, and of course one of the consequences is that you can allegedly do more with less, and if ever an industry was being forced to attempt to do more with less in terms of resources, it is journalism, and so consequently and we are suffering an extraordinary thinning out of newsrooms right across the world and right across this nation. You can talk about what is local coverage, but when you talk about local initiatives for local coverage, but you end up concentrating only on major markets, that's a reflection of the tough economic truth that faces the profession and the industry. But one thing about 2020, not just the election, but the pandemic, even more, I think, is reminding people how much they need locally based media, and other people are looking for other models besides our usual economic model for press. Essentially the reliance on advertising. And turning to other non-profit forms of communication, which can maintain the locality and the local intensity of reporting that is so valuable, especially in an emergency like this, but do so without having to rely on a sort of capitalist model, if you like, for its economic well-being.
Do you ever worry, David, where are the future investigative journalists coming from?
Well, of course. One of the things that I was remarking upon about my own work is looking back at some of it. It seems to me as if I was living in some sort of perfect dream world for some time. I was at times able to devote years to an investigative project, and we just know. I think there are a few salient and rather rare incidents of that still continuing, but on the whole, any form of journalism that requires continuing and substantial investment is being pushed to the wall now. Long-term investigative projects are on the whole a thing of the past, and that's greatly to be regretted. I mean, it's the fiercest form in which the resource crisis is demonstrated now in journalism.
It used to be, and I know I'm 67 and I sound like an old guy just crawling, but it used to be on a Saturday or a Sunday, and Monday through Friday, you would pick up your newspapers, you'd get the news, you'd get the information along with radio and TV, but you would also have columnists, and columnists are not necessarily beat reporters, even though some of them do have beats, but columnists do that follow-up investigative reporting where you really get the full story behind the story, the backstory. And that's what's really missing in today's modern media. And I think that's what some newspapers are actually trying to do once again during this presidency, is bring that backstory reporting into activity again.
Yeah, in some ways, the crises, the three-pronged crisis of the pandemic, the economic fallout from that, and the racial injustice upswell of protest, against the backdrop of this particular presidency, has meant it's, has thrown out a challenge to journalism, and in some cases, I'm glad to say, people are rising to it. And I think what I was just talking about in terms of regional coverage is an example. You know, people will just put their heads down and get on with the daily work of doing what they need to do. And I think in the realm of political reporting, I think we're seeing some of our best journalism being created because of the challenge being so particularly piquant now. I mean, we have a president who lies at the rate of 12 lies per day, according to the very assiduous database being built by the Washington Post fact checker area. 20,000, you know, in total, something like a rate of 12 lies per day for a sitting president. That's quite an interesting piece of journalism in itself. And the fact that the journalistic trade can respond with such dedication is I think, an encouraging sign against what is, generally speaking, broadly, across the whole realm of journalism, a rather dispiriting scene of newsrooms having to cope with less and less in terms of income and more and more in terms of demand on their skills.
Well, one final note. We've got both political conventions finished. Now it's really on from the sideshow to the main show. There's about, 60-some-odd days before the election?
Up to 60 now. Or down to, if it's that way.
So
we're in the 60s. Put it that way.
What do you expect over the next 60 days?
A bitter campaign, yeah. Nasty campaign, to use one of our president's favorite words. And again, a challenge for journalism. I think we'll be turning to our beat reporters more than anybody else, and possibly the political beat. But every beat is affected. But again. It's a time when expertise is come under challenge and assault in this country, and expertise is needed. And I hope to see the best kind of expertise in these next 60-plus days.
David, we'll speak to you again next week. Thanks for joining us.
Look forward to that.
David Terechuk with the Media Beat here on Robin Hood Radio.